Check it out, well, I'm the master of balance, with multiple talents. I provide the landscape, baby, you provide the challenge. I've been broken down and out, and look at the sound that I'm drowning out. I'm around the town and I'm roundabout, and it's better than a kick in your freaking mouth. These words might scare you, make you tremble and double dare you. Now we're always learning, always listening and very burning. You're not checking the resume, two thumbs down is what they say.
The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. To find out more about this talk show or other talk shows broadcasting on KUCI, log on to our website at kuci.org or check out the latest program guide.
Good evening and welcome to this February 17th, 2012 edition of the Chat Room on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We are broadcasting live from the University of California campus in Irvine, streaming on the web at kuci.org and always available via podcast. We'll talk more about that later this hour. I am one of the many co-hostesses, Marie Stone. I'm joined by Elizabeth Zero.
Hey Marie, what's up?
How are you?
I've been looking forward to this day all week. Me and my vagina.
Vagina day?
Yeah.
Nathan has too.
I know.
Yep.
How's your vagina, Nathan?
Oh, it's doing well.
Okay.
It's
good.
Good
to know.
We are joined by Nathan Tang. How you doing, Nathan?
Good.
Good. We're all here every Friday night at 5 p.m. chatting about sex, relationships, dating, and vaginas. We're very lucky tonight. This is our first guests this quarter, actually. And so we're joined by OBGYN Dr. Alyssa Dweck and Robin Weston, co-authors of the awesome book, V is for Vagina. Some quick introductions so we all know who we're talking to. Dr. Dweck is a partner and full-time practicing OBGYN in New York who provides care to dozens of high-profile patients and women of all ages. She's delivered thousands of babies. She's a graduate of Barnard and has a master's degree in human nutrition from Columbia. Dr. Dweck is on the health advisory board of Family Circle magazine, contributed regularly to YM magazine, is a medical consultant for Step Up, Speak Out, .org and currently lectures at various public schools on sex ed. Robin is an Emmy Award-winning writer and author of several books, including Oprah Winfrey, I Don't Believe in Failure, 10 Days to Detox, How to Look and Feel a Decade Younger, and Relationship Repair, among others. She was a sex advice columnist for Women's Own, a pop psychology quiz columnist for Women's World, and has written hundreds of articles for national magazines, including Glamour, More, Family Circle, Cosmo, and Parents. The book we are talking about today is V for Vagina, your A to Z guide to periods, piercings, pleasures, and so much more. Ladies, welcome.
Hi there.
Thank you. Hey. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for coming on. What a fun book.
I loved it. I loved the book. My vagina really liked it a lot.
Well, that's great. We love it too.
Well, you did an excellent job, ladies. So, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Do you want to kick us off, Elizabeth? With you want to fire away at these ladies, or?
Well, my first question is what? I mean, I know what made you write the book because I read your book and it was wonderful. But for our listeners, what made you decide to write V is for Vagina?
Alyssa?
Yes, hi. So this is Alyssa Dweck, and thank you so much for having us on. I think we wrote this book really to get the word out that this is not a taboo subject. Mm-hmm. This is something that should be an open conversation and really start dialogue for women all over, whether it's with their friends, girlfriends, families, or their gynecologists, that the vagina is a subject to be spoken about.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. It's not something that my mother ever talked to me about, but I have a 21-year-old daughter who I will certainly be passing this book on to.
It is a weird taboo subject, and it's such, I don't know why vagina strikes me as a, strikes me as like a weirder word than penis. Like penis sounds like a happy word. Mm-hmm. Like I would name my dog penis if it didn't mean what it meant. But vagina is just, it's a hard word.
I did name my dog penis.
In the 50s, this is Robin Weston, and my mother had euphemisms for it. Vagina could not be spoken in our home.
Yeah, right.
I mean, she would call it something I won't even say because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then when boyfriends would come and pick me up, she'd say, "Have a good time, pussy." I mean, she called me pussycat. The thing was, the word vagina was taboo, and it's still taboo.
Yeah. Oh, come on. What did she call it? I have to hear this.
My mother?
Yeah.
It was, the name my mother used was Mutzi.
I like that.
And then I had my best friend, I've been calling her Noonie forever, and when I was researching the book, I found out that Noonie was another name for vagina, so now I can't call her Noonie anymore. Turns out I've been calling her vagina all these years.
I like it.
I wonder how many euphemisms there are. There must be 1,000 euphemisms.
Oh, no question. Well, we definitely mention many of them in the book.
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, people may not really or have not been able to speak about vagina, but I posted that we were going to be talking about this on my Facebook page, and within minutes I had 25 responses.
I saw that. That was it, yeah.
So obviously it's a special word. People are
talking
to.
We've gotten so much response from this book. Really, it's been amazing. I think Dr. Dweck and I both thought we would get a lot of response, but it's been overwhelming.
Well, there's a whole. I have a bunch of questions for you, if you don't mind, and if we have any
Absolutely.
Callers today as well.
We should remind our callers that we are taking your calls. So if you'd like to call in, the number here is 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, Dr. Dweck and Robin will be here taking your questions, medical questions, sex toy questions, what's normal, what's not. And if you want to email us anonymously so you're not put on the spot, you can always email the chat room at KUCI.org, and we can take your questions that way too. Fire away, Elizabeth.
Well, one of the things that I thought was so interesting, and I like history, so you wrote that portable vibrators were available for purchase as early as 1890, and an alternative to the portable vibrator was paying the doctor $2 to stimulate the clitoris to reach orgasm. Did that really happen? Did that go
on? Yes. And it was it was a way to relax women. I mean, it was a set. They, promoted it as a sedative.
Wow.
Well, actually, so, you know, women were thought to be quote-unquote hysterical, and this was one way of calming their hysteria.
Right. Well, I'll agree with that.
Didn't you see the vibrator play right here at Orange County Performing Arts? It was all about that.
I didn't see that.
There's women having, like, massive orgasms on stage. It was awesome. It was great.
Like, for real? They were really having them?
I hope not, but they were really good actors.
I feel like it seems like it'd be sold out.
It was.
Well, that's incredible. That was such a new thing that I'd never heard before. I thought that was really interesting. You also mentioned a little bit about female genital mutilation, and that's something that kind of sparked my interest because I've seen that in the news, and I know that it's still going on today. And do you ladies know much about that, or can you talk more on that?
Well, Dr. Dweck, I would say, thankfully, I do not see this in my practice. I practice in a well-to-do suburb in New York, and thankfully I don't see this, but certainly read about it, and it's on the forefront of the ACOG, which is the American College of OBGYNs, mind to make sure that this is a practice that isn't going forward. But it's very scary. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard about, you know, obviously not here in America, but over in, I don't know, Africa or some other countries or wherever in tribal regions. Do they do that for, is it to keep women from having, from wanting to be sexual, or what is the reason that they do that?
Well, I think it's to make, go ahead, Robin.
No, go ahead, Dr. Dweck. I mean, you can speak.
I think it's to, make these women undesirable to other men in their communities and to, prevent them from having pleasure, really.
Yeah. And going into that, the next question I have is, you wrote that 75% of women never reach orgasm without the help of, stimulating the clitoris with use of hands, tongue, or sex toys. And then also 10 to 15% never climax at all. And I thought that was kind of incredible. And I was wondering, what would you tell a woman who's never, or have you come across women who have never had an orgasm, and what do you tell them to do?
Sure, I can take that. So I certainly do come across women who come into my office very concerned that they've never reached an orgasm. And this is usually young women mm-hmm. who I think just haven't had enough experience yet and haven't experienced enough with themselves or partners in order to figure out what's pleasurable for them. And sometimes it's just a matter of relaxation. And other times it's a matter, there can be an organic problem going on. For example, certain diseases like diabetes or heart disease or whatnot can cause some vascular changes and really make orgasm difficult due to a poor blood supply to the genital area. So it can be organic, but it also can be something that can be overcome.
Yeah, it was interesting to me because, I was a little bit older, actually, even though I was already sexually active. But it's not like your mother or our mothers really sit us down and say, okay, honey, this is, I don't see that's very common in our society. You know, we don't tell our daughters necessarily.
Don't tell your daughter how to reach orgasm?
Yeah, I've never my daughter how to reach
one. remember their first orgasm. I mean, I remember mine. Do you remember yours? Your first orgasm?
Me? Oh, I do, yeah, for sure.
Yes, right?
And I was alone.
Right, I mean, this is Robin talking. And I remember mine, and I remember understanding how I reached it.
So,
yeah, I think that's... I just wanted to say something before I forget, and that is Dr. Dweck and I are donating a portion of the royalties to the Fistula Foundation.
Oh, yeah, I did read about that. Tell me more about that in your book, because that's something that happens during childbirth, I think. Is that correct?
Right. I think Dr. Dweck should speak about it.
Sure. This is an obstetrical injury, typically noted in third world countries where there really isn't much obstetrical care, where there is such injury to the rectal, vaginal, even bladder areas, and these women suffer with fistulas, which are abnormal communications from the rectum to the vagina typically, and it unfortunately causes such social outrage that these women become pariahs, and it's really very socially isolated. So it's a shame, it really is.
And the foundations sends doctors over, and they go into the villages and or into the hospitals, and they actually save these women's lives by performing a fairly simple procedure. It's my understanding. And then their whole lives are changed, and they can go back into the community again. It's huge.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, that's very generous of you to donate proceeds to that. And again, the name of the book is V is for Vagina. Our listeners who might be interested in getting a copy of it, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, we are on with Dr. Alyssa Dweck and Robin Weston on the book, like Elizabeth said, is V for Vagina, Your A to Z Guide to Periods, Piercings, Pleasures, and More. And feel free to call in 949-824-5824 with your questions or email us at thechatroom@kuci.org. And, it's funny because as I was looking at the big questions people seem to have for doctors all of it was kind of what's normal. You know, there were a lot of questions about smells, the smell test, what's normal? And, is this discharge normal? And is this, weird bump over here normal? And I'm wondering if you can kind of give, because most of our listeners are college-age women and kind of new to the gynecological scene, I'm wondering if you can give them a couple of guidelines to sort of say, okay, here's where you should drop everything and call your doctor. Are there kind of warning signs, smell-wise, look-wise, that they should be on the lookout for?
Oh, I think this is so apropos. In fact, I think the entire premise of the book is women want to know, are they normal down there? So that's a question that we're trying to answer. So in regard to odor, we really discuss this quite freely in our chapter about hygiene and its media's push towards all of the perfumed, fragrant products that may help with vaginal hygiene. And really, truly, these are probably not needed because the vagina is an amazing self-cleansing organ, and it really has a lot of mechanisms to do that. With that being said, an odor that is, really foul or fishy can absolutely signify an infection and is a reason to go to the doctor for sure. A discharge that has a terrible odor or causes irritation or lots of itching or has blood in it is typically not normal and should be checked out. And I think that lumps and bumps provide a lot of fear for young women because, of course, the first thing they think of is, oh, my God, I have cancer down there. And that's something that we can usually provide a lot of reassurance about that's not the case.
Very nice, very nice. We have a caller who wants to remain anonymous, if you don't mind. So we're going to put him on for him or her.
It's her.
It's a her. We're going to put her on and let her ask her question. Hold on. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent. Do you have a question for us?
Yes, I do. I am currently using a IUD for my form of birth control, and I have to say that ever since it has been inserted, orgasms have completely been ruined, and I want to ask the doctors, the experts, if, in fact, that is a common complaint, because I haven't run across anybody else who's discussed it. I've discussed it with my doctor, and the only thing he said was, it sounds like that's not working for you. Well, I think I'd like to just be a little bit more analytical before I tear the thing out.
Absolutely. So I'll certainly feel that, and thank you so much for calling in. Is your IUD the hormonal IUD or the copper IUD?
It is the hormonal IUD. Thank you for asking.
Sure. So I would say that there are a very few select women who do get side effects from this hormonal IUD that really have been quite variable, from headaches to mood changes to pelvic discomfort. And it wouldn't shock me if perhaps this progesterone component is something that you're sensitive to. Unless you can really pinpoint something else going on that might be inhibiting orgasm, or you're having pain during sex since the IUD has been inserted, which in and of itself can impair orgasm, I would say this just, I agree with your doctor, this is not the right form for you, and it would be great to have it removed and try something else.
Well, I guess the concern is then removing it and putting in the other one, for me it feels very distinctly a structural issue, orgasm being a contraction of sorts, if that's accurate to say.
Sure.
It almost seems like having a foreign body there is interrupting that contraction, almost stopping the vibration, if you will. It's like touching, you know, a crystal glass once you want to hear the ring.
Right. Well, what you could do is just, you know, have the IUD removed and use a non-IUD method for a couple of months and see if things seem to regress back to normal for you. And if orgasm returns, you may want to rethink, using any sort of IUD. And so that would probably be the best way to check it out.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
You're
for
welcome.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Thanks for
That's
call.
A great question.
We have another question about what's normal and what's not normal, and that is my girlfriend's labia is huge, like just huge, and they claim down to her knees, but I doubt that's true.
Giganda labia.
Giganda
labia. Ladies, you did write, too, called flabby labias, so
yes.
I remember reading that.
Tell us about those. What's normal? What do you do about it if you don't like it?
So, Robin, is it okay if I field this one as well? So,
Dr. Dweck, I can only make jokes.
I think normal in this instance is truly relative. I see lots of patients who have, you know, maybe above average size labia and are just thrilled with them, and other women who have much smaller labia and feel that they are tremendous. They get in the way of exercise, tampon insertion, sexual relations, and they really complain that it creates a bulging look when they wear tight clothing or lycra or gym or yoga clothes or something like that. And there is a bigger desire to investigate this and perhaps even consider surgical remedy to take care of it. However, I wouldn't really consider this a medical problem unless it's something that's interfering with her day-to-day life. And then, of course, it can be addressed. Of course, if her labia is rapidly growing in front of her eyes over the, you know, month or two, that's not normal and should definitely be addressed. But to have a chronically stable labia that's either larger on one side or large on both sides, it's truly a relative problem.
Does my I maybe
Dr. Dweck, it's
back.
Robin. I have a question. Does your labia get bigger as you get older?
I don't think they grow as you get older once you've reached adulthood. However, after childbirth or, you know, any trauma to the area, certainly the shape of things can change a little bit.
I think they're just like my husband's earlobes.
Those get bigger as you get older.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
I haven't met your husband, Marie, but I cannot wait to meet him now.
I don't know if, you know, I don't know if it's getting bigger, but they're getting longer, right? It's just gravity taking its course. So maybe that's what happens to your labia.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. You are tuned into the chat room. We are on with Dr. Dweck and Robin Weston. The book is V for Vagina, Your A to Z Guide. And so we were talking a little bit about vibrators earlier. I hate to switch the focus off of the medical, but let's get on to sex.
I love vibrators. Talk about vibrators. Yay.
We'll get back to the medical, I promise, because I have 80 questions there, too. But so I think every woman knows about... I hope every woman knows about vibrators, but I'm curious about some of your other favorite sex toys that may be a little bit more, maybe not uncommon, but maybe just a little bit lesser known than the almighty vibrator to recommend to women. Any favorites out there?
Well, I'll take that because this is Robin. I wrote the toy chapter, and actually I think I did concentrate mostly on different kinds of vibrators. You know, the egg-shaped vibrator or the rabbit. I know the rabbit's fabulous. And I think what I discussed a lot were other types of apparatus that you, I shouldn't say apparatus, but things you can use like in sex games like handcuffs, French ticklers, dildos, nipple clamps, you know, those kinds of things that sort of enhance safe role playing. But I don't really know about other toys other than vibrators. Did I mention other toys?
What's up with dildos? Because really, what the heck are they doing? They're not doing anything. They're just taking up space.
Right? I would like to differ. I beg to differ.
Okay. I love a healthy debate.
The dildo debate.
The dildo debate.
Well, it's there when your man is not, right?
Yeah.
Ladies,
right.
Can I get a uh-huh?
Yeah.
He could even be in the next room.
It doesn't
Actually,
talk.
He might be there. I mean, if your partner is turned on by you using a dildo, then, you know, it's all what's going on in the bedroom is really up to the couple.
Yeah.
As long as it's safe.
Yeah. Or if you're single and you don't, and there's no prospects of sex with anyone anytime soon.
But it's not
Definitely
doing anything.
The dildo.
It is. It's mimicking the man's penis. And then the vibrator is for the clitoris.
Okay.
So you can do both at the same time, I've heard.
You've heard. Don't do that while driving because you're out of hands.
Oh. Yeah, that's duly noted.
Well, I'm here to make sure that everything is done safely. So I just want to make a pitch for making sure your sex toys are clean and washed in between and plenty of lubricant is used because I have certainly seen my share of emergency room visits for, you know, very vigorous sex toy play.
Oh,
and
wow.
That can be a little scary sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with the honesty of your patients. Do you get a lot of that, you know, I fell on it sort of?
I get a couple of stories that definitely get changed as the interview goes on. But look, I'm never about making any judgments. I just really want to take care of people. And, you know, we do from time to time see people with risky habits with sex toys. And I just want to make sure that I put a plug in for safety there.
Yeah, yeah. Now,
plug is a good word.
Plug is a perfect word.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
And I assume that even if you're the only person using a sex toy, it still needs to be washed and cleaned beforehand or, you know, just outside
well,
bacteria
yeah, of
jumps.
Course.
I'm just
Absolutely.
Trying to make sure our listeners are taking care of themselves. Because I think the mentality
That's
is,
true,
I'll just throw it in the nightstand and take it out the next time.
I'm so OCD. I just assume, you know, everybody washes their hands 15 times a day. I don't know. It's not.
Don't throw it in the nightstand too quickly. Take it.
So now, one of the things that I thought was so interesting, you said Americans and Greeks are at the top of the list having sex between 117 to 124 times per year, while the Japanese report only having sex 6 times a year. And I've mentioned that to a couple of people in the past couple of days, and I'm like, guess how many times the Japanese have sex? And I'm just shocked, really. I mean, is that pretty accurate, or why do you think that is?
I researched this. I can't at the moment give you the source, but I'll call you back on that. It was a fact. You know, I researched it several times, and they did surveys, and they came up with that. Why? I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, and I wonder.
I can't say why culturally, why that's, maybe that's how often it's among married couples.
Yeah.
Because I know that there are other places that men go, and it's accepted in the Japanese culture.
Yeah, I guess. I thought maybe it's they don't like sex, or maybe it's just they're so modest they don't want to report it.
Exactly.
It was a reporting issue. Maybe they're just not admitting to, to their activities.
My girlfriend who I walk with, she lived in Japan, and she said that the men are very horny there, or they appear to be.
Yeah, but they're not doing it with their wives. I think they go to, I wouldn't say prostitutes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you got to get it somewhere.
They have the craziest porn. The Japanese have the most fantastic.
Oh, they have cartoons. Have you seen the cartoons?
Yeah, they have the anime, but they also have, I mean, they really, they're the people who brought you two girls, one cup, right? That's all Japanese.
I don't know what that is. I've never seen
it. Neither
do I. Oh, is that true?
Neither do I.
Never mind.
I guess we'll all be on YouTube later tonight, Googling that one.
Never mind.
That's volume two.
Yeah. It is volume two. 3, 4, and 5, actually. It's unbelievable. Anyway.
Oh, I have something, too, that I wanted to ask you. For some reason, I thought that I was supposed to get a pap smear every year, and I don't know why I've been doing that, because you wrote that women between 21 and 29 every 3 years, and then women between 30 and 65 every 3 years for older women. Or tell me, what is that? Tell me.
Well, I think some of this is also individualized. You know, we also have to always make sure that you've had a couple of pap smears in a row that have been normal, and then you can go to more expanded screening. So if there have been any abnormal pap smears in the interim, we probably will do them closer together. Some of these guidelines are somewhat new as well, and they seem to change somewhat frequently, so it's always updated. It also depends on how many partners you have, whether you smoke, so that will also change your pap smear frequency.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
But women who have gone through menopause, do they need to have frequent pap smears?
Well, again, the most extensive screening would be every 3 years, especially now with the advent of checking for HPV along with a pap. Mm-hmm. And that's a second layer of screening to check for the virus that can cause cervical cancer. So if a pap is negative for a couple of years in a row, along with negative HPV screening, sure, in a person with one partner who doesn't smoke, who's never had any prior abnormal paps recently, sure, they can be done every 2 to 3 years.
What about a woman who's had a hysterectomy but she still has her cervix? Does she still need a pap smear?
Right. She would follow the same screening guidelines as someone who did not have a hysterectomy but still has their cervix in.
Okay. Interesting.
Right.
Very cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Tell me, here's something I learned. I knew about the G-spot, the elusive G-spot. I didn't know about the A-spot.
Oh, I know.
All right. I have to talk about the A-spot.
Tell us about the A-spot.
A-spot. We don't really know whether, didn't I write that? We're not sure the A-spot exists.
You did write that. I'm just, I'm just here for the listeners. I'm just.
Oh, I see. I don't know. I mean, there was discussion about the A-spot, but I think, Dr. Dweck, you were surprised to hear about the A-spot.
I had never heard of the A-spot.
Right. And then I had a hard time digging up some more information on the A-spot.
What is the A-spot? What are you guys talking about?
It was bounced around for a while. It's supposed to be similar to in a different place than the G-spot, and a more erogenous zone.
Oh.
But it can't be confirmed, which is a drag. Otherwise, everyone would be searching for their A-spot.
I'm going to start looking now. Now I want to know.
Yeah, I think we should all search.
Don't waste too much time.
It's always, what do they say? It's all about the journey, not the destination. So,
I'll look for your A-spot. You can look for mine.
Yeah, it's not so bad to go looking. other good things could
let
come
you know
of that.
If I find it.
We should. Hey, Nathan, do you want to chime? Any questions about your vagina, other people's vaginas?
No, this is pretty interesting so far. I'll be a spectator for now.
Nathan's our young DJ who is here learning all about sex and vaginas and.
It's interesting things. A lot of when men hear that I've written a book about the vagina, they all say, "Ooh, I'd like to read that." Dr. Dweck, don't you get that from men?
I have gotten that in some instances, and other instances I have men asking almost for permission to read this book as if it doesn't really apply to them, but I think it's an interesting read for both men and women.
No kidding. And in fact, it should be men that are reading this book. There's so much great information here that I think I had a friend in college who was very sexually active. He'd been around the block. And he still had this misconception about how many holes are down there, he kept asking.
Oh.
And I was like, I think a lot of men just think it's a complete mystery down there, even if they've been around and explored. I think, it's not like anatomy class.
Yeah, you really have to get in there with a mirror and look around.
You do, which so. You should.
And I did.
I'll set the record straight. There in women, there are definitely three separate holes, and they're spread out a little bit more than you think, but just for that person, little education, right?
Yeah, which always helps.
Yeah,
hopefully
definitely.
He must be now in his mid-40s, so hopefully he got it figured out. But you know, my plug is really for men to read this as well, because I do think men just sort of run for the hills screaming when you tell them you're having your period or your water broke or something. I think their first reaction is, oh my god, I've got to get out of the room as fast as possible.
Oh yeah, so. Well, my husband, he's 54. Hello, Mr. Zero, if you're listening. And I'm surprised at how little he really knows about, or he knows how to make it work, but. When it's the time's right. Oh man, I'm going to get in trouble. But just about like the anatomy and how women's bodies, and how the uterus. I think one night we were drinking and I drew a picture of a uterus and ovaries and I kind of explained where everything was and
the steerhead.
Like, yeah,
steerhead. Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Oh, you know what's interesting? I thought that you wrote was about semen allergy, and I was wondering, can you be allergic to one man's semen but not to another man's, or just like for semen allergies? How does that work?
Yes, you can. I don't want anybody to think this is a particularly common disorder, but from time to time, women will come in and really complain about a lot of irritation or burning or almost a feeling of swelling or redness every time they have sex. And it's not always isolated just to the vagina. Some women even break out in hives or get a bit of a rash in other areas of their bodies. And after a huge process of elimination, to make sure it's not condoms or latex or the type of lubricant or spermicide or any other sort of massage oil or whatnot that people are using, there are people who are allergic to their partner's sperm. And the usual way to figure this out is to have them use condoms, and if the symptoms go away, voila, you pretty much figured it out.
Wow.
So that is an entity.
Is there anything a man can do to change? I think I've heard if they eat pineapple, it makes their semen sweeter or...
Tastes better.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, guys,
really
get that pineapple.
Sure.
Yeah.
I've heard that for men, that there are things that they can do to change the taste of their semen. Is that true for women as well?
Absolutely.
Oh.
I think dietary influences are huge, whether it's garlic or something spicy. Probably, if pineapple's having that effect on men, I can only imagine it has the same on women.
Women, get that pineapple.
Speaking of diet-related issues, I was going to ask, you mentioned that in the Western world, women experience hot flashes more than those, like Japanese women or Nigerian women. Is that diet-related, or why do you think that the Western women were having a harder time with menopause and hot flashes?
Right. I think a portion of this is diet-related. Naturally, the Asian women's diet is much higher in soy and those phytoestrogens that are found in soy products. So, and this is a dietary source, not something that they're taking as a supplement.
Mm-hmm.
So that probably is helpful. That's the only real thing I could come up with scientifically. Part of it could just be cultural.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe they don't complain as much.
I know.
Yeah.
Well,
I do think that there's a serious fear, especially among college-age women, which is why, I think this particular show is great to have on for college-age women. There's a real fear of doctors and a, kind of what's going to happen to me in their sort of mentality. And so, you know, making this feel very common, very human, and, you know, less scary, kind of demystifying it for college-age girls and women, I think is a real service to them.
Yeah, in fact, it would be great, too, if you could mention what are the top things that a woman, you know, say a young college girl or any woman who's not really familiar with her body, what would be the top things that you would recommend to take good care of your vagina?
Well, I think number one, establish an early rapport with a gynecologist. You don't really want your first appointment or experience with a gyno to be when you're miserable with some sort of horrible problem. You really want to get a comfort from your gyno during those times after you've already established a relationship with them. So I think it's important to go early. The ACOG recommends even between the ages of 13 and 15 to go for your first gyno exam, even if you're not getting an exam or a pap smear, which isn't necessary at that young age. But this way you can speak about what the exam might entail in the future, talk about risk-taking behaviors and the like, you know, speak about periods and whatnot, because young girls get kind of scared about that, especially the first couple of times, and that's very helpful.
Yeah, so that would be a great advice for mothers to take their young daughters in, not necessarily for, you know, a pap smear, because that might be pretty traumatic at 13, but maybe take her in and say, you know, just show her around, give her a little tour.
Absolutely. It's an introductory visit so that there's a familiar and friendly face at the other end should something come up in the future. And something that I love to do is just make sure that my really young patients know that they can call me or call and speak to one of my nurses with any type of question. And no matter what it is, we're not really going to be too shocked or embarrassed by it because we've probably heard it before.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think that's another good message for girls is whatever you have to talk about your doctor, they've heard it before. And, you know, there's so many things that you're embarrassed to bring up or that you'll decide that you're just going to live with for a period of years until it just gets unbearable. That you're just too scared to say the words or you're just too scared to make the appointment. And
chances are somebody else has been through it and we've seen it before, and that's part of the whole visit is to make people feel comfortable and reassured.
Do you ever go home?
And it's better than the dentist. What's that?
Yeah, isn't it true? It is better than the dentist.
Sorry to all those dentists out there.
Your treasure box at the end is way nicer than the dentist's office.
Well, you know, I was just thinking about the era in which we grew up in Marie, because we're pretty close in the same age. And, you know, it was in an era where, you know, there was STDs were all of a sudden, you know, kind of thrown in our face. And, you know, through the 80s, we sort of, all the STDs really came up and were, you know, a big deal.
What about AIDS?
And AIDS, right.
AIDS, absolutely. And so, really, I guess our parents didn't have the education that's available now. And so it's probably your, you know, having these kinds of books and things available is something that's pretty, I guess, new, would you say?
I don't know. We had our bodies ourselves. That told me all kinds of stuff.
That's right. I remember that. And, you know, when Dr. Dweck and I were talking about writing the book, and that was something I remember we discussed, that I wanted a version of our bodies ourselves updated just on the vagina, because, I mean, that was my Bible when I was growing into womanhood. And I wanted something as lighthearted as that, in a way, so that the information could be presented without it being a scary thing, you know, and even to put in some laughs.
Yeah.
I think it's important.
No kidding.
You know,
You're tuned into the chat room on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're streaming on the web at kuci.org, and you can check out our podcast. This will be a podcast in the next couple of hours, probably. If you go to kuci.org/talk, click on the chat room, scroll down. There are archives of all of our past shows up there. We are on with Dr. Alyssa Dweck and Robin Weston. The book is V for Vagina, Your A to Z Guide to Periods, Piercings, Pleasures, and so much more. And we're continuing to take your calls for the next 20 minutes or so, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Question about sex with tampons. Good idea, bad idea, and why?
Sex with a tampon in, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
These are questions we're getting on from our online viewers.
Oh, I see. I would not recommend sex with a tampon in. I think if you choose to have sex with your period, there's absolutely no harm in that, but I would remove the tampon. Some women find it comforting to put in a diaphragm or a cervical cap to have sex when they have their period so that there isn't a lot of blood coming out. But
that's a great idea.
Sure.
That's
helpful.
I wish I would have known that. Darn it.
Elizabeth's right. Having an epiphany
when I was
well,
younger.
There's nothing worse than a stuck tampon, and I can't tell you how many women I've seen come into the emergency room for various reasons that they have a tampon stuck in that they cannot get out, and certainly having sex with a tampon in is one of those reasons, so I wouldn't advise that.
Yeah.
Fair enough. What do you think are men's biggest misconceptions about women's vaginas? Do you get a lot of questions from men about, it's sort of like my one earlier, but there are other ones that crop up that we can clear up for men?
I think the only question that because I don't see men in my office typically.
Yeah.
But I see plenty of partners or husbands who are frightened to have sex with their pregnant partners. And I typically, if nothing's going wrong in their pregnancies, that's a perfectly fine activity. So
right.
that's something I get asked by men.
Yeah.
I was going to say that I think men who are not in the know often think that the only way a woman can have an orgasm is with intercourse. And I think, you know, statistically that most women don't have orgasms with intercourse alone.
Right.
So in that way, men need to be educated.
Yet another reason that they should pick up this book and figure out what's going on with women. It's and just, you know, I don't know why we're built like this, but the amount of time it takes for a woman to orgasm versus the amount of time it takes for a guy to orgasm, and you know the amount of effort put into one versus the amount of effort put into the other. I know that I don't know what my question is here, but
I know it just seems unfair.
Yeah, the intelligence.
Well, you know what? I think for women. It's Robin here. It's in the head.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think, and I might, Dr. Dweck, you'll have to chime in on this, but for men, I think it's physiological. And although the orgasm is physiological, the leading up to it is really, I think, in our brains.
The other
different for men? I completely agree.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think on for me, because when I was a little bit older before I actually ever had one, but I didn't even realize like that I needed to, it's like, you know, trying to do 15 things at once to get it to work. And then also the whole thing with like when you release, and I think I read this in your book where it said, you know, you feel the urge to urinate or a little bit of liquid comes out and to me, you know, I didn't know, I didn't want to go to the bathroom, you know, but right. If you don't sort of have that feeling of like willingness to release, then it doesn't really happen, I think. So I think maybe that's a confusion for a lot of women, and your book definitely helps clarify that.
Well, some women do secrete some fluids or even have a larger amount of ejaculate during orgasm. Some women really don't notice much. Most women are not urinating during orgasm, although mm-hmm. they may have the feeling they are because fluid may be coming out from the general vicinity. But I agree with Robin, so much of this is in the head, especially for women who have a lot on their plates. And if you're thinking about dinner, finances, laundry, your job, your children screaming or whatnot, the last thing on your mind is having sex and having an orgasm. So this can be quite distracting.
Well, then that makes sense that it would be in your head, because if you think if it feels like you're going to go to the bathroom, but you're not, but you actually don't, it's just that feeling or that thought, maybe that's part of it, but you're also thinking about other things. So there's a lot of things in your head going on.
That's funny. I've never had that sensation.
Oh,
I'm curious. Tell me about that. So you see, really every time you have an orgasm, you feel like you have to go
right
to the bathroom?
Right before, it's like, it just for a second, you feel like, oh, I think I'm going to...
Yeah.
But you don't.
I think that's individual. Some people feel that. Some people don't.
No, you're wrong.
Now our millions of listeners know how Elizabeth Zero has orgasms. You're welcome, America.
This is the value out of our show. Yeah,
and I think also women have to feel good about their selves, their bodies, to have confidence in their bodies and to feel lovable and to feel the freedom to experience pleasure and to feel that they deserve to experience pleasure.
Oh, that's definitely in our head.
Yeah, I think that's very important, and to know that you deserve it and that you can relax into it
right.
and trust your partner as well.
Right. Right.
So you wrote 13% of women admit to watching porn, and you equated addiction to porn as the same kind of feeling of using heroin.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big
part. You're like, no, yeah,
it's true.
I mean,
viewing pornography or looking at pornography can be an addiction. Men have it. It's broken up families. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, people have ended up in prison. It's can be uncontrollable. And there are a certain percentage of women who also have addiction to pornography.
Yeah.
I don't think it's not the same statistic as men, because men are more visual.
Right.
When it comes to being aroused sexually. And women enjoy erotic literature more than men.
Yeah. I first watched porn just because I was curious. And I really, it's one of those things, it's like, am I normal? And then if you see another, you know, it wasn't like I've seen anybody else's vagina up close. So it was kind of nice to see, like, oh, okay, well, yeah, that's kind of what I...
You were doing it for research.
I look like a porn star. No, but you know, I was doing it for research. No, but it's sort of interesting, you know, you can see from a, you know, what is it,
a bird's eye view or something?
Yeah.
Or an ant view, or I don't know what the view is.
Whatever.
Aerial view.
Yeah, just to kind of get, you know, for someone, you know, when they're just sort of figuring it all out.
You can check the
close
box
up.
Off. Okay, yeah, the close-up, right?
Nathan, do you ever watch porn? Have you ever seen any porn?
Yeah, for the same reason you did. I mean, out of curiosity.
Yeah.
My ex-boyfriend was a porn editor.
Oh, wow.
So I saw a lot of porn.
Am I going to see you in a movie?
A lot. No, no, he wasn't an actor. He was an editor.
No, am I going to see you in a movie?
Oh, no, no.
Did that affect him sexually? Like, did it become blasé for him or technical? Did he just say, you know, oh, we should cut to that shot?
You know, interestingly, he became very religious in the aftermath, which is what broke us up. So he turned to pretty born-again Christian afterwards. But,
wow.
And this was in the 90s, so there was a lot of drugs, and I mean, I'm sure there's still a lot of drugs. I don't know how you get yourself to be a porn star without taking a certain amount of drugs. But, yeah, he would call me at like 6 a.m., and he'd play the soundtracks to these things. And I'm like, God, I need my coffee. You know, I need to ease into the day before I hear the soundtrack to your porn film before I've had my second cup. You know, we were in our 20s, so everything was still happy-go-lucky. But I think it impacted him later on, yeah.
That's interesting. Well, so tell me, ladies, what is on your plate? What is next for you? Are you working on something interesting now? Or tell us more about yourselves.
Well, Dr. Dweck? Yes, well, I'm still practicing full-time, so I think that takes the bulk of my time. But this book has been a load of fun, and we're trying to do what we can to promote it. My next stop on this tour is to start on a college campus tour, actually. I'll be going up to Colgate University in New York to do a book event there, so that should be a lot of fun.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you'll be up there promoting Vias for Vagina?
Promoting the book, and I really think that, as you said, the college-age woman is a really great audience for this book, and I would really want to just pass on the good word and get the word out that this shouldn't be the taboo subject that it is, and I think it should be great.
That's wonderful.
Robin, how about you?
Well, I'm a writer. So I'm the medical reporter for thirdage.com, which is the largest boomer website. I'm writing book reviews now. I'm working on two articles and, writing.
Spinning the plates.
Robin and I are hoping maybe we can have phase two with some other book on a similar subject matter.
P is for penis.
Dr. Dweck is the best person to work with, I have to say.
Oh.
I mean, I've written 9 books, and I've not collaborated ever before, and I just feel like this collaboration has been extraordinary. I feel really lucky.
It was
a true meeting of the minds. It really has been a fun project.
That's great.
Well, it definitely shows in the book because I think it's absolutely terrific, and I'm very excited to have had the opportunity to speak with you and read it.
Before we leave on that note and ending on sort of a decorative note, perhaps, we didn't cover all of the shavings and waxings and piercings and the things you can do to decorate down there. That's what I like to call them.
For the holidays.
For the holidays.
Now bejazzling.
The bejazzling. I went in for an eyebrow wax, and they were telling me about vajacials. They give your vag a facial.
Yeah.
Amazing, isn't it? Just amazing.
I guess
wacky.
You can do anything.
Women don't have enough to think about.
Right.
In terms of taking care of ourselves.
Yeah.
So I know the current trend is certainly towards less hair than more. I assume is that what you see passing through your office?
Yeah, see in your office.
Very little hair. I'm seeing very little hair in my office.
I always wondered if hair tracks the economy, and as the economy is doing really well, the hair gets less or more, and is, you know, I mean, because it's expensive to have.
That would be a really good gauge, actually. But Brazilians have become huge. I see so many young and older women who are really having full hair removal. But I guess it's a pendulum that constantly swings, so we'll see.
And what are the advantages or disadvantages to removing the hair or keeping the hair?
Well, I think it's really all about what makes an individual most comfortable from a aesthetic standpoint. I mean, the hair is, I think, really the biologic reason for the hair is to really trap odor and pheromones in order to give off pheromone odor for your partner or potential partners. It's just an individual thing. We just wanted to make sure that we mentioned all the different infections and mishaps that can go on after various forms of hair removal.
You want to make sure you're going to a salon that is sanitary.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true, because I did go and get wax, and the waxing lady said, "Don't worry, I never double dip." And I said, "What?"
Thank God.
And she only puts the stick in once, and then, wax, and then she gets rid of the stick and then uses a new stick. So then I guess that would be more sanitary.
I heard this great horror story about this woman who went into one of the Asian sort of less reputable kind of, on the strip sort of places. And it was going on for so long, it went on for like 45 minutes or something horrible, and she was covered in wax and got up off the table and walked out.
Oh, my.
And then went to kind of a more expensive salon, but then they had to melt it all down. I mean, it just sounded like the worst horror story that you'd never go in again. But
That sounds absolutely awful. A little mineral oil probably would have done the trick, but that does sound very uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable, I know. Yeah. And piercings, are they safe? I mean, it seems like over time, I mean, I know your ear piercings are safe because you're able to take care of it, but any place where it's moist all the time, I would think would be problematic.
Moist. I hate the word moist.
Right. Look, I'm not advocating piercing, but certainly I see plenty of women who are pierced, and I think as long as they have good hygiene and they take care of it and it doesn't become infected immediately after piercing, some women claim that these are very pleasurable devices to have in place. I will say I've run into a couple of troubles getting piercings in the clitoral areas in and out, for example, during surgery to the genital area where the piercings need to be removed and then replaced. So that does present a little bit of a challenge for us gynecologists.
Is that the most common places they pierce the clitoris?
Yes, the clitoral hood, just to be exact.
Okay.
Most do not pierce the actual clitoris because you really can suffer some nerve damage.
Yeah, that would be
the
painful.
Very vascular area.
Oh, my God,
area.
That seems crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the clitoral hood is, I wouldn't say it's incredibly common, but sure, it's the most common place that I've seen pierced in that area.
Oh, okay. Well,
do they put in little studs or rings?
It's usually a ring or a ring with a captive bead, something like that.
Oh, wow. Sweet.
Right.
Have we missed anything big that we should have asked you and we didn't ask you?
I feel like we really covered the gamut. How about you, Robin?
Yeah, I think you women were fabulous. Aww. We've done this before. You guys were great.
Well, I have to tell you, I have to tell our listeners that there is more in the book. I mean, it really,
it's so good.
A couple hundred pages of fabulous information on your vagina. And we really, we did, for as much as we talked about it, we still only scratched the surface. So if you have, more intricate questions, feel free to pick up a copy of the book. You can still email us after the show, and we can do our best to help you out at the chat room at kuci.org. But ladies, I really appreciate you joining us tonight.
Well, thank you.
Thanks so much.
And thank you.
Thanks so much. You have been tuned into the chat room on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We will be right back here with you next Friday night at 5. Would you like to introduce that fabulous topic?
Oh, well, next week we're going to be talking about sexy online dating and hookups and kind of crazy fetishes. And we're going to be interviewing a guest who is the creator of Filthy Notes from Strangers.
Yep.
.com. So you want to check that out now.
I can't tell you how much fun I'm having on that website.
Oh.
It is such we can't read any of it on
yeah.
the air because it's 1,000%.
Oh yeah.
Not so, FCC approved.
Yeah, but we'll find creative ways to talk about it. But yeah, so get ready for next week because it's going to be naughty.
Right after you Google Two Girls, One Cup tonight, you can then go on to Filthy Notes from Strangers. Is it .com? I think it is .com.
Yes, filthynotesfromstrangers.com.
Yeah, so we'll be here right back here with you next Friday night. 5 o'clock is where we are. The chat room at KUCI.org is how you reach us. And, if there's a topic out there that you'd like us to cover, something you've been curious about, something you'd like to hear, lob us your suggestions. I can't
yeah.
promise you that we'll take them, if they're bad or something.
No,
but
yeah.
It doesn't hurt.
Lay it on me, brother.
Lay it on. All right, Elizabeth and Nathan, have a great, great week.
Thank you.
Thank you, too.
See you right back here next Wednesday at 5 o'clock.
Check it out, well, I'm the master of balance. Multiple talents. I provide the landscape, baby. You provide the challenge. I've been broken down and out, and look at the sound that I'm drowning out. I'm around the town and I'm roundabout, and it's better than a kick in your freaking mouth. These words might scare you, make you tremble and double dare you. Now we're always learning, always listening and very burning. You're not checking the resume. Two thumbs down is what they say. Get up till you're dizzy, stay awake and thin like Lizzie. Touch your trembling chest and look at what a walrus digests. Last Halloween.